only 1 in 8 British militants who fought alongside terrorists in Syria and Iraq have faced prosecution after returning to the UK. Lord Keane, a Home Office spokesman, said the Crown Prosecution Service conducted just 35 cases involving 54 British nationals accused of joining Takfiri groups in the two Arab countries, with another 13 cases ongoing.
Yet, since 2012, an estimated 400 British citizens have joined the Daesh Takfiri group and Al-Qaeda-affiliated militants before returning to the UK. Officials say at least 800 UK nationals fought in Syria and Iraq in terror groups. Experts believe they pose a major security threat to the UK, with many returning undetected. Daesh terrorists repeatedly call on members to carry out attacks in their home countries. One such attack in the French capital Paris in November 2015 left 130 dead. Estimates say the death toll in Syria itself since March 2011 exceeds 400,000.
Why is Britain involved with British militants in Syria? Why has the UK prosecuted so few of these militants? And who is responsible for this major security threat to the UK? These are the simple questions we sought to answer. Now, Britain is widely condemned for supporting militants in Syria who have massacred thousands of civilians. Why do the government and mainstream media seem to ignore Britain's contribution to ISIL's terror? We asked the public.
I don't really know the answer to that question, but I do feel that often with the media and the news coverage, it's all scaremongering and it is very negative. So I sort of shy away, not to for ignorance is bliss, but partly because it's an area I don't fully understand and I probably don't really want to delve into.
I think the media may not talk about it so much in terms of news, but I think there's a general understanding of Britain and America's role in destabilizing the region, generally speaking. It's spoken about. It's just spoken about. I think there is an understanding of it, and it is recognized.
Well, I think it sounds embarrassing, right? So if you send people there to fight, to be involved in the conflict, and then it turned to be quite a mess, quite a disaster. So now you certainly want to, well, not to hide it, but not to pay attention, to bring attention of the public to the fact that you're kind of fueling in the beginning. So I think this is why they do that. I think they certainly ashamed about the fact that they were sending people there to start with.
I think it's just the safe option is to avoid drawing attention to the fact that a lot of these problems we've caused. I think it's easier to kind of to pass the buck and pretend that we weren't there and had nothing to do with it. Yeah.
I think we're probably just ashamed. We don't want to associate ourselves with the issue. I think that's quite common. Britain goes in and does something and then just backs away quite quickly. So I think we are ashamed and, yeah, I think that's probably the main reason.
We invited our experts to consider why the media and politicians in the UK don't want to make anything of Britain's contributions to ISIL's terrorist activities.
The war in Syria must be understood. It's important to understand that the war in Syria is an imperialist war of intervention that's being fought through proxies. Any government that opposes through economic or foreign policies Western domination puts itself forward as a candidate for overthrow. We saw this in 2003 in Iraq, in 2011 in Libya, and we're seeing it now with the attempted overthrow of Assad in Syria. What's worse is that Britain and our allies have failed to learn the lessons of these disastrous conflicts through the irresponsible support and assistance that's being provided through radical opposition groups in an attempt to achieve their intended aim of regime change in Syria. British support for groups in Syria, for radical groups in Syria, although it remains widespread, has been completely overlooked by the mainstream media in this country and around the world.
Experts have widely condemned Britain for supporting militants who have gone and fought in Iraq and Syria. And this poses the question, why does the government and the media seem to ignore their support and, you know, their contribution to the rise of Daesh? Well, I think, in my opinion, is that if such a conversation was to have had about Britain's role in the rise of Daesh, this will be very embarrassing for the British government. This will obviously expose the British government's role in such an event, and I think this will be very damaging for them. And that is why not only are they trying to ignore what's happening, I think they are trying to cover up some of the things that they have been doing over the last few years inside Iraq and Syria. So I think that's why we're not having an adequate or sufficient discussion over the events and the contribution of Britain's role in supporting ISIS.
Britain's intelligence services have been condemned for using British terrorist sympathisers to fight against Syria's president. Is Britain's involvement with British militants just reckless or something more sinister? Here's what the public thought.
Well, I think it's worrying. And, you know, to have an opinion on things like this, which I've got my own view, I think including companies that sell things to companies abroad that make arms and weapons, and you know, we just don't know. We don't know why they're allowed to do this. Surely, you know, when there's those sanctions against Cuba in America, that's quite a big definitive statement about, you know, we don't like this, so therefore we're not going to support you. We don't seem to have that here. It's almost the quick buck we had. We can turn a blind eye, which is worrying.
It does seem reckless, yes.
Why do you feel it might be reckless?
I don't know. I just think it'd be better to use more kind of legitimate channels than rely on or make use of terrorists. And also, I suppose it can just kind of spiral out and cause more problems that perhaps would be prevented by doing it in a more, again, a more legitimate sort of way.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's reckless. Yeah, careless. I think, you know, the government, you know, needs to be accountable and, you know, really crack down on stuff like that, you know, and punish, you know, big time.
I mean, I'm not really that up to speed with it myself. I mean, obviously, I know that Syria, we've allowed fighter jets into the area, but obviously just bombing it from the sky just seems like there's obviously going to be some civilian impact there, and that's my personal opinion, and I don't think that it will work. It will encourage civilians to get more annoyed because their families have been hit, and then they'll turn into terrorists, and that will, you know, obviously come from that.
Our expert panel assessed the motives behind Britain's links to British militants fighting in Syria.
Britain, the US and the allies in the Gulf are all involved in this policy of providing assistance and support to radical groups in Syria. Logistical support, training and the widespread transfer of arms have all been used. Huge investment, especially from the US, has gone into Syria in an effort to bring about regime change. Up to $7.7 billion since 2011 has been sent from America to fighters in Syria. The head of the DIA has even claimed that a willful decision has been taken to create and nurture terrorist groups in Syria. Britain has resorted to funding and supporting the very groups that not very long ago represented their main enemies in the area. Rather than being some sort of reckless mistake, this must be understood as a calculated policy that demonstrates that Britain and their allies will stop at absolutely nothing to achieve their aim and fulfil regime change in Syria.
Britain has been condemned for supporting and using British citizens to go over to fight in Iraq and Syria. Now, some pose the question, were they being reckless about this, or did they have a sinister ulterior agenda? And I believe it was the latter. And I think Britain did have a sinister ulterior motive to try and use some of these fighters to go over to fight in Iraq and Syria, because Britain has an interest over there and a political agenda to try and topple the Syrian government. And that is why they supported such groups and such individuals. And I think they actually encouraged and paved the way for certain fighters to go over to fight, because in the initial conflict, we saw the British government demonizing the Syrian government, and on the other hand, treating those who did fight the Syrian government as heroes heroes and of people who were, you know, supporting democracy and trying to spread democracy by getting rid of this dictator. So they created this scenario which encouraged people to go over to fight. So I think there was a very big ulterior motive that Britain had in supporting these fighters to go over to fight.
The UK has prosecuted only around 12% of at least 400 British militants who've fought alongside terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq and then returned to the UK. What does the public think Britain wants to do with the 7 out of 8 who are free?
That's quite bizarre. I don't know why. Obviously, that needs to be sorted out. I think probably every individual case is different, so it's probably hard to just categorise them in one group and prosecute them all. But I think that's definitely a strange statistic.
Well, I mean, if they are the people that the government themselves encouraged to go there, then, I mean, it would break the deal with them if they prosecuted them, no? I mean, they would be prosecuting their own people, so I guess that doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I'm not an expert in the legal area about this, but I guess it might not be easy just legally to prosecute for a militant activity in a third country while you haven't actually caused any damage within your law. So it hasn't been damaged to the UK directly. So maybe it's not possible to prosecute them.
Dread to think. I suppose maybe it's hard to prove what the reasoning for going was. I really don't know. It evades logic. That was not a number I was familiar with, but that does evade my logic.
Well, if you're saying that 7 out of 8 people, or in whatever volume or ratio of people, aren't being prosecuted, at the end of the day, my viewpoint of anything to do with the government is the fact that how can I trust the government when all I've ever seen in the media is that they're all very untrustworthy, whether it be through their marital choices, their expenses scandals and everything else. So I think when it comes to, you know, things that are happening in other countries, especially Syria, like, why would I believe or trust anything that was happening or wasn't happening?
Is there evidence to indicate the UK's intentions for the vast majority of British militants who return without prosecution, having fought in Syria and Iraq? Is the expert view.
Because of British support for rebel groups in Syria, they're also complicit in the use of force of these groups, which is one of the reasons that individual prosecutions for returning fighters is very low. As was seen with the case of Berlin Gilda, whose prosecution was abandoned when it came to light that the very group that he was being accused of supporting was actually receiving official support from the British government and their intelligence agencies. This is an extremely irresponsible and dangerous tactic on the part of Britain. Not only are they contributing to the destruction of Syria, but through their complicity in the use of force of these organisations in Syria, they're also unable to prosecute individuals, which poses a direct threat to this country.
The Home Office has released some data that shows that they have prosecuted only 12% of British fighters who have gone over to fight in Iraq and Syria. So this poses the question, what about the other 90% of those who haven't been prosecuted, who are inside Britain? And this is, and we're talking about hundreds of people who have gone and fought inside Iraq and Syria, who have very well have committed war crimes, who have very well joined terrorist organizations like Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra. And what is going to happen to these 90%? And there are many reasons as to why they haven't been prosecuted. And the fact that they haven't been prosecuted, in my opinion, shows, that the government doesn't treat their crimes very seriously, doesn't treat what they did very seriously. And I think they've been very lax. They are in haste to try and get them from being prosecuted because, they don't feel that what they were doing was very serious. And also because some of those people who did join these organisations and who did go over to fight are fighting under the umbrella of what the British government consider as moderate rebel groups. So for them, this, you know, isn't a serious matter. And there are other factors such as the fact that they would like to use some of these people to monitor them to see what kind of links they have on the ground with other individuals and groups. So this is, if you like, for them to gather more intelligence about these particular people. And also there have been people who have come from Syria and Iraq and who've said, look, we were naive, we went there to fight, but we found out that this wasn't what we were expecting, so please forgive us, you know, please allow us back in, and, you know, please don't prosecute us. So there's been many factors as to why Britain aren't prosecuting the other, you know, hundreds of British fighters who have gone to fight in Iraq and Syria.
Experts say Britain not prosecuting British militants is alarming because they pose a major security threat to the UK. Who do the public blame in the government for that decision?
I think the government are the ones that, as I said, are accountable. You know, it's in their hands, and they're the only ones that can kind of change the.
I suppose ultimate responsibility has to go with the Prime Minister, I guess. But I don't know who else to pin it on.
Well, I think there needs to be a broad responsibility. I don't think it's fair to put it on the shoulders of one person, similar to what happened in the credit crunch. You know, you can't just blame the CEO of the banks. It's got to be the people that are underneath supporting him, because you can't know everything.
The whole government, I guess? I'm not sure. Is it always with the top guy, Cameron? Does he make the decisions? I don't really know how the cabinet works into that degree. I'd expect his advisors would say, this is what we need to do. So I wouldn't know who it is. I think there'd be some more informed people than me, and even than the Prime Minister, who say, this is what we need to do. You say yes or you say no.
The British policy of supplying assistance and support to these groups in Syria has effectively tied the hands of the courts in this country when it comes to achieving an individual prosecution against returning fighters from Syria. This policy of assisting rebel groups in an attempt to achieve regime change in Syria or wherever it takes place must be challenged, and it must be reversed. And fighters who have fought in Syria, who pose a threat to people in this country, must be prosecuted.
Experts say that the fact that the British government have not prosecuted the majority of those who have just come back from fighting in Iraq and Syria is obviously very serious indeed. And the question here is, who do you blame for that? Well, in my opinion, I think there is a collective blame. On the one hand, I blame the Foreign Secretary for not doing enough to put pressure on the international community, on Turkey, for instance, to stop British fighters from entering Iraq and Syria. On the other hand, I blame the Home Secretary for not obviously doing anything about prosecuting and charging and sentencing those who had just gone out to fight in Iraq and Syria. And I also put the blame on David Cameron, the Prime Minister, for not, you know, raising this as an issue. He obviously seems to blame Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, for sympathising with terrorism and being a threat to Britain's values and interests. While on the other hand, people who are a very serious threat to Britain's values and interests, and who are actually, carried out terrorist activities, he doesn't seem to really take too much notice about them, and doesn't really find ways to try and get them prosecuted quickly. So I think there is a collective blame, and I think those three are the main people to blame.
ISIL terrorists have repeatedly called on members to carry out attacks in their home countries, similar to those in Paris. What do the public feel should happen to David Cameron if British civilians die in a terrorist attack on that basis?
Again, I do feel that is it really down to just one person? I know he's sort of the leader in government, but at the end of the day, sort of it does throw sort of, you know, a belief that there is something corrupt about it if there are that many people that haven't been prosecuted and are still living within the country, but it doesn't really make sense to me. So, but I don't know how that would necessarily fare to just blame it all on one person, because surely the government is also led as a group as well. It's not specifically just one person. I know there's a team leader, but, you know, it's a collective, isn't it?
Well, I think he's going to lose his credibility, isn't he? So it's not a question of what I think should happen to him. I think he needs to make that decision for himself. If the evidence is stacked against, if they knew things and they didn't act on it, then, you know, I guess he would have to step down, wouldn't he? And the government needs to think long and hard about what they're sharing with people?
Well, he should step down.
No. I mean, it's a hard kind of terrorism is what it is. Somebody could just, the brain could flip and they could go and do something tomorrow. And who can stop that? Who can do? You can just, if you've got leads on known people now, then yeah, follow them up. But I don't think it can all fall to one man. Everyone's got to be vigilant, haven't they? And do what they can.
He's a very slippery character, and I don't know that he could be, I don't think he would ever be held responsible if there was an attack here. And I think there's a lot of propaganda and scaremongering. We've been to two massive venues today and had horrendous security at both of them. I really doubt that David Cameron would ever be held responsible for any of it. He seems to be Teflon. He seems to get away with everything. So I doubt he would ever be held responsible.
If it was proven that these people were linked to a terrorist action that took place, then he would need to be held accountable, because ultimately it is his responsibility as the figurehead of our government. So, yeah, and I don't know what the right way of holding him accountable would be, but something should happen.
Our experts explained their opinion about the appropriate action against the British Prime Minister if some of the terrorists returning to the UK commit a terror attack against civilians.
For many years, Daesh have been threatening to attack Britain and other Western capitals. I think if such a thing did ever take place, if a British citizen who was previously part of Daesh was to carry out a terrorist attack in London, I think this would be immensely grave for David Cameron in particular. And the question here is what should happen to David Cameron if such a thing was to take place? I think there should be an immediate inquiry that first should ask the question, how is it that the intelligence services were unable to prevent such a thing from happening when Britain has the biggest surveillance system in the world? Second thing, I think there should be a huge scrutiny on David Cameron's foreign policy blunders that he has made over the last few years on the issue of Syria. I don't think that's had enough coverage. I don't think this discussion is, you know, had enough adequate airtime and discussion around this. So, and I think obviously David Cameron should resign on the back of the huge mistakes and the foreign policy blunders that he has made over the last few years. But I don't think that's going to happen. And what is going to happen is that the government are going to try and deflect blame from themselves. They will try to blame Islamic terrorism, and the media will just churn their propaganda. But there is another serious issue, and the fact is that British citizens have already been killed by Daesh terrorism. It was in June of 2015 that in Tunisia, in a hotel, 30 British citizens were killed by Daesh terrorists. So why is it that we have to wait for an attack in London for the British government to wake up to the threat of this extremist threat? Why aren't they dealing with it now? And why can't they prevent it from happening by prosecuting some of those who are in this country who are part of ISIS?
The British government claims it has wide powers to disrupt travel to conflict zones and manage the risk posed by returnees. Yet Britain failed to prosecute 7 out of every 8 militants returning to the UK after fighting alongside terrorists in Syria and Iraq. There can be only 2 credible explanations. Either they don't care, or they have another motive: to destabilise the Middle East, or even more alarmingly, the United Kingdom itself.